Parshas V'zos HaBracha brings us to the end of the Torah. And on the one hand, we're happy. We've made it through another year. We're starting another cycle. As we've discussed in the beginning of Sukkot, that Shlomo HaMelech, when he awoke and he saw all that great wisdom he got, like he completed so many books, he made a party, that great party that's recorded in Sefer Melachim. So many people got so much meat. And from Shlomo HaMelech we derived the halacha that the person is supposed to make a siyum when he finishes. So we have Simchas Torah. We're rejoicing with the Torah. We're completing a cycle of the Torah. But at the same time, we're going to read about Moshe Rabbeinu's passing. And that's tragic. And we're now going to see a medrash. There was a compilation called Batei Medrash. They put together some long-lost midrashim. And there's a whole medrash called Midrash Ptirat Moshe Rabbeinu. The medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu's passing. And the medrash says that the medrash begins one step back. The medrash begins 40 years ago, 40 years before Moshe's passing. We're holding in Mitzrayim. And 3 days and three nights before we leave Mitzrayim, everyone's busy borrowing stuff from their neighbors to get wealthy, as God had told them. Moshe told them, go borrow from your neighbors all their jewelry and their ornaments and their clothing, and then when you leave Mitzrayim, you'll have all that wealth. And Moshe Rabbeinu is spending 3 days and three nights looking for Yosef's coffin, because Yosef had made the Jews take a vow that they wouldn't leave Egypt without his coffin. And as he's looking and searching, doing archaeological research, looking in all the archives, trying to find where is Yosef buried, he meets up with Serach, the daughter of Asher. Serach is a woman who lived a long, long life. She was blessed by Yaakov Avinu, because she was the one who broke the news to him that his favorite son Yosef was alive, so he blessed her, she should live a long life. There are midrashim that say she's still around. So Serach, she's still around at that time.
Does she still around?
Yeah.
The Mitzrayim didn't mark Yosef's kever as one of the pharaohs?
Oh, so in a second we'll deal with that. If you want, there's a Gemara in Sota that says that they put him among the tombs and they hid him among the pharaohs. But this Medrash goes a different route. The Medrash says he met up with Serach Bas Asher and asked him, what are you so busy with, Moshe? So it's funny. She speaks so freely with Moshe. You see, she was an old lady. And Moshe tells her, I'm looking for Yosef's coffin. And she tells him, come with me to the Nile and I'll show you where it is. He went with her and she told him, I want you to know this is the place. The Egyptians knew that Yosef made the Jews take a vow that they wouldn't leave Egypt without his coffin. So they said, we'll ensure the Jews never leave. And they made him a coffin of solid lead. And they sealed it in a way that you can't get it out, and they dunked it here in the Nile. You can't get it out. But this is where the coffin is. So Moshe stood there, and he knew the Egyptians had brought all their magicians with their black magic, and they had made all kinds of traps that you can't get to that coffin. So he stood by the Nile, and he called out, and he said, Yosef, Yosef, you know the time has come for the Jews to be revealed, to be exiled, and you made them vow that they won't leave Egypt till they take your bones with them. And now give honor to God and don't detain us. We gotta go. You overcome all the witchcraft. You gotta get out of it. You gotta come up to me. And the coffin rose. The solid lead coffin rose. We discussed a few months ago the medrash that Moshe dropped a piece of gold with the Alei Shor and God's secret name. But this medrash doesn't go that route. Yosef's coffin arose, floated on the water, and Moshe lifts the solid lead coffin on his shoulders, and he starts going. Everyone's busy getting wealthy, and Moshe is going to be the poorest Jew leaving Egypt. Moshe enters Egypt riding on one donkey, that's all he had. The Mashiach, who's called Ani Rochev Al HaChamor, is supposed to be a reenactment of Moshe, who came as a pauper riding on a donkey. So too the Messiah will be poor coming on a donkey. And Moshe, while everyone else gets wealthy, he's rejoicing he's got Yosef's coffin, they could go. God says, Moshe, I swear, what you did is no small act. Because you weren't worried about getting wealthy, because you weren't worried about getting all the gold and silver like everyone else, when your time to go will come, when your time to pass will come, I myself will take care of you. You took care of Yosef, I'm going to take care of you. And here the Medrash begins with Bezos HaBracha. You should note this isn't only in times of pain. We're going full cycle. We're going to begin Bereshis. And the Medrash says in Bereshis that Hashem went and had Malachim dancing before Adam Arishon at his wedding. And Hashem himself helped him, led him down the aisle. And the Chazal tell us in Pirkei Reb Lezer that from there every person should learn. A person shouldn't say, I'm a big rabbi, I'm a big businessman, I can't take a day off to help this guy on his wedding day. Every person should take the time off to help a guy on his wedding day. No such thing. If God could go and be with Adam like his shomer on the wedding day, every person should take time off to be someone's shomer on their wedding day. No one should say, I'm too big for that. On the wedding day, we make the chasen like a king. And he always has someone with him. On the simple level, it's to protect him. We don't want him to... A lot of mishaps happen on wedding days, unfortunately. And on a different level, so it's like he has a shamish. He has someone who's serving him. Yeah, that's his... that's the person who's...
Husband always gets tons of doubt before the wedding day, and the shomer is supposed to...
That's a good thing for a shomer to do. But the Gemara that says this says that there are people that the satan is jealous of. And one of the people the satan is jealous of is a groom. So therefore we point satan. Them... Satan. Moshe Rabbeinu's day of passing came. And God told him, it's coming near. And Moshe said to God, he said, after all I've worked, you're telling me I'm going to die? La amut ki yechye. The verse in Tehillim, our sages say, began here. Moshe said to God, don't let me die. I want to live, and I'll be able to recount all the great things you've done. And God told him, Ravlach, enough. Call Yoshua and I'll tell him what to do. Moshe doesn't give up. He says, God, why am I dying? Because you want Yoshua to have the honor? Let him lead. I'm willing to let him lead. I'll lead. God said, are you willing to serve him like he served you? You'll be shamish for him like he was shamish for you. You can't have two leaders. Moshe says, fine. I'll be shamish for him like he was shamish for me. So Moshe goes up to Yoshua and he says, Rebbe Yoshua. And Yoshua gets scared. He says, what's going on here? So he tells him, you want me to live? This is the deal. You got to be the Rebbe and I'm the student. If you let, you got to let me call you Rebbe Yoshua, otherwise I'm dying. So Yoshua says, fine, I'm willing to do anything to let you live. So Moshe is following Yoshua like a servant. And the Shekhinah comes down and starts talking to Yoshua, and Moshe is standing outside. And when Moshe sees this, he gets jealous. And the second he gets jealous, he says, I'd rather die 100 deaths than feel one feeling of jealousy. And he turns to Hashem and starts praying to die. He said the famous quote, Amar mea mitot, 100 deaths, velo kina achat. And not one element of jealousy in my heart. But then he turned to Hashem and he said, Hashem, what did I sin? What did I do wrong that I should die? And Hashem told him, look, I decreed on Adam Arishon that mankind has to die. That's why you have to die. So Moshe said, what? I trampled all around heaven for nothing. I spent so much time toiling for your children like a horse back and forth for nothing. God says I've already decreed there should be death for man. So Moshe says to God, Adam, you commanded him one commandment and he messed up. I didn't mess up. Why should I die? So God tells him, Avram made my name holy throughout the world. He died. So Moshe said, yeah, but he had a son like Ishmael. Look what Ishmael is going to do to the Jewish people. I don't have kids like that. So God says, okay, Yitzhak, he was an Ola. He was willing to give his life for me. God says, so Moshe says, yeah, but he had Esav. Look what Esav's kids are going to do to us. So God says, Yaakov, he had 12 tribes. And yet, he died. So Moshe says, well, he didn't do what I did. He didn't go up to heaven. He didn't trample around heaven like I did. You didn't speak to him face to face like you did to me. He didn't get the Torah like I did. So Hashem said, Ravlach, enough. No more. Don't talk about this anymore. God, he says, so Moshe said, God, the Jews are going to say, that you know why Moshe died? because when he got old, he started being sinful. Because he was sinful. So God tells Moshe, I already wrote in the Torah that there was no prophet like you. So Moshe says, yeah, they'll say when I was young, there was no one like me. But I got old, they'll say I did bad. So that's why you had me die. So God tells him, no, I already wrote in the Torah that it's because of your sin that you didn't honor my name at Mei Meriva. So he said, let me go into Israel and live two or three years. God says, there's a decree, you shouldn't go in. So he says, okay, so I won't go in alive, let me go in dead. Let my coffin be taken in. Why shouldn't I be buried there? Like we discussed, that the land atones for the people. So God says, why are you toiling me with all this? It's because you didn't make my name holy. It's not happening. Moshe says that you, God, you forgive the first sin a person does, the second sin a person does, only from the third sin do you count. That's what we said by Yom Kippur. That God forgives the first time a person does a mistake, God says, I'll pass that. You made a sin, fine, don't repeat it. You do a second time, God says, I'll pass it. Only on the third time. I do one sin, you're not willing to pass it, you're willing to forgo for the whole world the first two sins they do. What about me? So I have my first sin and that's it, bam, I'm dead, can't enter, can't be buried. So God says, Moshe, you have six sins I never told you about, but you got six, not one. So Moshe says, so God tells him, firstly, I told you, go take the Jews out of Egypt. You said, send someone else. You were too persistent not to go. Secondly, after you came to Paro and things got worse, you turned to me and you said, Hashem, you sent me to take him out of here, and ever since I came to Paro, things only got worse. Thirdly,
why is that a sin?
We ordered it. Right?
Thirdly,
because he so to speak was complaining about what God had done for the Jewish people. He said, yeah, God, you said everything's going
to
be good, and ever since I came to Pharaoh, things only got worse. And God automatically rebukes him for that. Thirdly, you said that if I don't wipe out Korach and his men, then I didn't send you. Fourthly, you said that if I didn't create an opening for Korach to be swallowed up, I'm going to create a new creation. I don't know exactly what was the sin in that, in saying that God will create a new creation to swallow up Korach and his men. Fifthly, you yelled at the Jewish people and said, listen, rebellious ones. And sixthly, you told the Jewish people you arose instead of your father. Your father is a group of people that are sinful.
What? Breaking the tablets was okay?
Yeah, breaking the tablets was okay. What didn't you understand?
The Midrash doesn't seem, from the very start, I know Midrash sometimes can be very strange when you first see them. There has to be some inner explanation.
Oh, so we'll get, we have to go.
Because on face value, Moshe seems very
in a second we're going to deal with how should we understand everything that's going on here.
No, what about hitting the rock?
Hitting the rock is the one that the Torah says was a sin. God's saying there are six that you don't know about. God says one I publicized in the Torah. There are six.
What did I deserve to get these people?
That doesn't seem to be enumerated here. I don't know.
What was the first one?
The first one was
he didn't want to go.
He said, send someone else. Moshe says, I learned from you. You called them sinful people. God says, yeah, but I didn't mention their forefathers were sinful. He said, God, how many times did the Jews sin and I begged for them? And you were willing to forgo their sins. 9 times. And me, you won't forgo my sins? He said, you can't compare Tzibur to Yachid. And until today, you were in charge. That's it. So he started praying and begging, and that's what Shlomo Amel said, Tachnunim yedaber rash. A poor man tries to get mercy and doesn't get him very far. It's like a wise man who was the teacher for the prince. And anytime people needed things, they knew he was very close to the king. Whatever happened, he could take care of it. And he was always the big boss. Wherever he went, people would respect him, honor him. They knew he was really high up there. And then the prince died. And then this wise man had to go around and beg people for donations. And so too Moshe Rabbeinu, throughout his life, when the Jewish people needed him, he could daven for them. And everything was in his charge. Chazal tell us he ruled over the angels in heaven, he ruled over what was going on over here. He was able to control everything. He wanted water to come out of a rock. Water comes out of a rock. God, the Medrash says, God said, okay, we'll have water come from the earth. Moshe says, no, from the rock. So water comes from the rock. Man comes from the heaven. He was in charge of everything. But now on his last day, he was begging everyone to daven from him, for him. As we mentioned, that the Medrash says that if the Jews would have only davened for Moshe, they could have gotten him to enter the land of Israel. But as much as Moshe davened for the Jews wouldn't daven for Moshe. Something to get used to. We mentioned, they say, Rav Aryeh Levine, when he'd do someone a favor, he'd give him a small rock. So the person would say, why are you giving me a small rock? He says, because I know I did you a favor. One day you'll throw rocks at me. At least they should be small rocks. So Chassam Sofer writes in a tshuva, he says, there's this person who hates me, the Chassam Sofer writes. And then he says, I don't know why he hates me so much. I never did him any favors. So Moshe Rabbeinu needs the Jews to daven for him.
But and they were crying for him for 40 days.
After he died, everyone cried. Before he died, no one davened. So long as Moshe was in charge, everything, so long as he was there, he was high up there. Now his last day came, and that's it. Moshe davens to Hashem, Hashem Elokim. He says, I know you created the world with rachamim. You created man with vayitzer. It says Hashem fashioned man, Hashem Elokim fashioned man. God created man with rachamim. So he says, God, I want you to treat me with rachamim. Throughout my life, you showed me your greatness, and now that I'm an old man, I'm asking for rachamim for your nation, that you should forgive all of them. And now I ask you to forgive me. Don't be like a human king. A human king, when he has a servant, when he's young, so the servant serves him well, so he loves him. And then when he becomes old, so he hates him. But you, Moshe Rabbeinu, we say it in Shema Kolenu, Al Tashlichenu Le'et Zikna. Moshe Rabbeinu was the first one to say it. He said, don't distance me, Al Tashlicheni. Don't distance me, Le'et Zikna, now that I'm an old man. I'm 120 years old. Don't say now I'm no good as a servant. You created everything. You could bring a person to life. You could kill a person. Who could do like you? Why is Moshe saying this? He said, if you let me... Now the Medrash answers your question. Medrash says, why was Moshe so adamant to stay alive? So earlier this week, we brought one shot. When a person is connected to Hashem, and a person knows that every day is a gift from Hashem to serve Hashem, then the most valuable thing he has is life. When a person is living for the physical, like all of us are, so then we don't value life as much as we should. The more spiritual a person is, the more he values life. But the Medrash says, why was Moshe fighting so hard? Moshe was fighting for the Jewish people. As much as it seems like he's fighting for himself, the Medrash says, Moshe said, if the Jews will try to sin, and I'll be there, I'll ensure that they won't. Moshe is telling them, all of Hazinu, you're all going to go down, I know it. And Moshe is saying, if I'm there, maybe you won't. Moshe told Hashem, he says, if I'm around, I'll be able to tell every generation all your miracles. If anyone says, what happened, I'll tell them I was there. This is what happened. I don't have to be the leader for that. I'll hold the Jewish people up to par. Lo amut ki echye v'asafer ma'aseya, Moshe said. Don't let me die, let me live and I'll say over what's happening. Hashem told him, if you stay alive, they'll make you into an idol. So he said, Ribon Shom, you saw by the Egel. They wanted an idol. If I wanted to, I could have taken it and said, I'm your God. I didn't do it then. If I wanted to be their God, I could have done it then, and I didn't. God asked him, Moshe, whose son are you? He said, I'm the son of Amram. He said, Amram, whose son was he? So Moshe says, he's the son of Yitzhar. And whose son was he? He was the son of Kahas. And whose son was he? Moshe says, he was the son of Levi. He says, and who'd they all come from? He says, from Adam and Rishon. So God asks him, okay, now we just did a review of history. Tell me, is any one of them still alive? Is any one of them that didn't die? Moshe says, no. So God tells him, and you want to stay alive? Why are you different? So Moshe tells Hashem, says, Adam and Rishon, he stole. He ate what he wanted, so you taxed him with debt. Did I ever steal? You wrote about me. I'm your trustful servant. I never stole. Why should I die? God tells him, Moshe, are you a greater tzaddik than Adam Arishon and all his generation? So Moshe says, yeah. Adam and Chava were seduced by the snake. And I...
the humblest man.
And I brought people back to life with the snake. God asks him, are you greater than Noach and his generation? Moshe says, yeah. Noach, you brought the Mabul on him. And Noach didn't ask for mercy on his people. I spent my whole life begging for mercy for the Jewish people. I said, you should wipe me out, not wipe them out. I did the exact opposite of Noach. He said, are you greater than Avram? I gave him 10 tests. He says, yeah, but Avram had Yishmael. That is good. His sons are going to do to your sons. He says, are you greater than Yitzhak? He says, his sons are going to destroy your home and they're going to destroy your offsprings. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, in this line, you guys should remember, because I don't know if it shows up in any other Midrash. The Ribbono Shel Olam tells him, did I tell you to kill the Mitzri? The Mitzri. You killed the Egyptian person in the very beginning. Did I tell you to kill him? This is the only Midrash I know of that seems to say that everything boiled down to Moshe's death, God brings it down to that Mitzri. Moshe says to Hashem, you killed all the firstborns in Egypt. I'm going to die for one Mitzri? Hashem tells him, you comparing yourself to me? When I kill, I could bring back to life. But can you bring a person back to life? Moshe tells him, don't you remember all the honor I honored you? No, Hashem tells Moshe, he says, and how much honor did I honor you, Moshe? You told me to rise, I rose. You told me to settle, I settled. Anything you wanted me to change from the heavens and the earth, I did. I wanted to bring down the drink for the Jews from the heavens, and they should have food to eat from the earth. And you said, no, let the bread come from heaven and the water come from the earth, from the rock. And I did it. Whatever you wanted, I did. And even this I would want to do, to give you life. And you said, I don't want to. You said, it's time for me to go. What? That's what we said. That when he saw Yoshua, he said, I can't continue life like this. I see, so I'm going to be jealous. It seems like he's arguing to have life the way it was. Now the Midrash goes on. I think your patience have worn thin, but the Midrash goes on for many, many pages about the last day and about the Malachim who came to take him and how he passed away. Anyone who wants to can photocopy this or borrow it. It's a beautiful... How many people want to continue the Midrash? We'll take a vote.
Continue.
What?
Want to continue the Midrash or go on? We still have to do the Parsha. Okay. So, we go with the majority. This is called the Midrash about Moshe's passing. It's part of a book called Bet Midrash. A compilation of long-lost Midrash.
And where were they found?
I don't know the exact history of each one. I don't know. I don't know. A lot of them are quoted in many places. You said I should make a creation to swallow up Korach. I did what you said. You said that whoever serves other gods will get destroyed. And on the Egel you said, no, don't destroy them. Forgive them. I listened to you. The Torah is called God's Torah, and I gave it to be called your Torah. Like the end of prophecy, the end of Malachi, Zichru Torat Moshe Avdi, remember Moshe's Torah. The Jews are called my people. They're called my servant. And I gave them your name. They're called Moshe Amo, the nation of Moshe. And I spoke to you in every fashion, Amira, Dibur. And I let you speak to me in every fashion, Amira and Dibur. I don't eat and drink, and I made you like me. I let you be up in heaven for 40 days and 40 nights without eating and drinking. I am Elohim, and I gave you the name Elohim. As we discussed, Rav Saadia Gaon's explanation that Moshe Rabbeinu had the level of a malach. God told him, Rei netaticha Elohim nefaro. I have prophets, and you also have prophets. Aaron is called your prophet. no creation could look me in the face, and I made you that no creation could look you in the face. I said that you should see my back, you won't see my front. And about you it also says that everyone looked at Moshe's back, they couldn't look at him in the front. I honored the Torah with 22 letters, and with every letter I used to honor you. I sent you to Paro, you took out the Jews from Egypt. I commanded you about Shabbos and the Mila. I gave you the Ten Commandments. I covered you with a special cloud. I gave you the two luchos. You destroyed them. I made you the singular in your world.
Sounds like a
eulogy. Right. I gave you the Torah. I honored you more than the 70s Canaan. When God finished this, Moshe admitted for everything, and he said, God, you made me greater than everything. You did with me so much kindness that I can't even begin enumerating. The whole world knows how much you honored me and gave me greatness. And the whole world knows that you are Hashem singular in your world. There are none other than you. There are none like you. You created everything in the heavens and the earth. You are the first. You are the last. And who could speak about your greatness? I'm asking you one thing. Let me cross the Jordan. Hashem tells him, Moshe, I took two vows. One, that you won't enter the land of Israel. And two, that I won't destroy the Jewish people. If you want, I'll go back on this vow, and I'll let you enter the land. But then I'm going back on my other vow. Notice, where is Hashem taking him? Where is, so to speak, Moshe's weak point? For the sake of the Jewish people, he wants to enter the land and stay alive. And for the sake of the Jewish people, God tells him, if I go back on this vow, then I'm going back on the other one. Now, we could really spend all night on this medrash. Like he said, there's a lot of depth here. Why is there a connection between Moshe's entering and the Jewish people losing that vow?
Isn't that thing because into the land of Israel, Moshe comes straight away this
morning? Okay, that's what they say.
One second,
Baruch Hu Anzani. Yeah?
He said that Hashem's vow with Am Yisrael was that the vow was that he would not destroy him. It's not to say that he would destroy him, he would just release the vow that he would not destroy them.
Right. But so that's putting them in a dangerous position.
So that's just putting them in a, it's not saying that he will destroy
and
them.
And even for that, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribbono Shel, you came to me with a trick. You're taking the rope at two ends.
Pizza
what?
In your house? Or
No. Let what? Him bring it. My wife will pay him, and then we'll bring
you
it up.
Pizza?
No, don't worry about it. Eat what you want. He says, God, you came to me with a trick. You're grabbing the rope at two ends. And you know what? Moshe says, I'd rather 1,000 Moshes be destroyed and not one Jew. God tells him, he says, Ribbono Shel, what are people going to say? The feet that trampled around in heavens, the hands that got the Torah, the mouth that spoke to Hashem will die. And even so, he didn't have an answer. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, the Torah records 10 times that Moshe died. One, God tells him, you're about to die. Two, go up to the mountain and die. Three, I'm going to die, etc. It enumerates 10 times. 10 times God decreed that Moshe would die and not enter the land. And yet, it wasn't sealed until the high court of heaven ruled that Moshe would not enter the land. And this, Moshe Rabbeinu, when he heard this, he didn't take it seriously initially. Moshe Rabbeinu heard God decreed he was going to die and not enter, and he thought, how many times did the Jews sin and I was able to daven for them? God forgave them. I didn't sin. I'll daven to Hashem. Won't he accept my prayer? When God saw that Moshe took it lightly and he didn't want to daven for himself, take. So the Ribbono Shel sealed his fate. And here we have a tremendous message for every person. Moshe Rabbeinu took it lightly. He said, I'll be able to undo it. And at that minute, our sages say, his fate was sealed. There are times that things seem very dangerous in this country. And it's our job to do something about it. Very often, we're lulled into feeling, you know, God's taking care of us. The Six-Day War, every time God took care of us, he'll take care of us. It's not our job. Our job is to see every danger as a danger. Moshe Rabbeinu, the one time he didn't see the clear and imminent danger, he paid the price. God swore he won't enter the land. Moshe saw that it was sealed. He stood up and started davening. He says, I'm not leaving here, God, till you annul the decree. There's a medrash that says that Moshe Rabbeinu surrounded himself. He took a staff. There's one for you too. He took a staff and he made a circle and he said, God, I'm not leaving the circle till you accept my tefillah. Okay, we'll get to that. That was by the ego. I got confused. Sorry. Moshe says, I'm not leaving till you annul the gzeira. Moshe wore sackcloth. Depends how many you're going to eat. There's bread. So whoever wants to could eat bread. Don't worry about the five. There are other people eating pizza too. Not only what's in the sukkah. You guys eat what you want. If you want to wash, there's bread inside. You guys could go wash and take some bread. And then
five boxes, five things of this. So if we have two, we have
if you,
two.
Anyone wants could have two. It's enough for two for everyone. If you whoever wants to could wash, there's bread inside across on the table. Right near the thing.
Yeah, but you want to do it in here, the
prayer. You bring the bread
to the sukkah. Oh, you want to bring the bread to the sukkah? Yeah. Okay, so we'll pause. We'll go wash. We're going to try to continue a little bit further in the medrash. But before we continue, we have to ask ourselves a little bit what's going on here. What is the importance of these sins that God tells Moshe? And according to one understanding that's going on in the Medrash, Moshe ultimately is told he's going to go for that mitzri. If you want to see an expansion on this, Nechama Leibowitz has a whole essay on this, on that. When she discusses that Parsha Shmos, she has a whole essay on this, on Moshe's passing for it. Killing the mitzri. We also have to ask ourselves, why does the Torah always associate it with Shimuna HaMorim, and what was so terrible about that, and why does he have to die for that? And why is Moshe really fighting this fight? So we said, for the sake of the Jewish people, for the sake of serving Hashem. What's really going on here? I think that if there's one message that we should take away from this medrash, it's the importance of tefillah. We rush into davening, we rush out of davening, and our focus in davening is, if we could have a few seconds of focus during davening, that's a good davening for us. We feel like, oh, I've done it right. Whereas the Midrash is showing us how much weight tefillah can have and how much Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't give up. In everything in life, we're quick to give up because we're used to having things come and work. And I think that a few of the messages that we're supposed to take away from this Midrash, one is not to give up, to fight for things. Moshe was a fighter. Things didn't come easily. He didn't speak clearly. He had a brother who was tops. He had a father who was tops. He had a sister who was tops. He wasn't really... It wasn't so simple that he was going to enter the top league. He didn't grow up with his family. He had to fight. And it wasn't an easy journey throughout. Our midrashim about the 80 years before we see him on the scene with Paro. That discussed him. Maybe he was king in Ethiopia. Maybe he was king over all kinds of tribes. Are different sources that discuss what his history was. We don't know much about those 80 years. But what we do know is that Moshe is always shown as a fighter. To the last day, he's not giving up. And a person isn't supposed to give up. And in prayer, we have one of the greatest gifts, the ability to pray. And we squander it every day. Three times a day. Even on Yom Kippur. How many people can say they had Kavana one whole Shmona Esrei on Yom Kippur? I don't think there are many. When we finally have a tear rolling down our cheek, we cherish it. We wish it wouldn't go away. We feel like, oh, I got somewhere. But Moshe Rabbeinu isn't this way. And it's not the length that counts, the Shulchan Aruch says. The point is to have focus, to mean what we say, and to have ingenuity. I think that's another point the Medrash is teaching us, like we pointed out many times throughout Tanakh, that prayer has strength dependent on the ingenuity. To say the same prayer 50 times is worth one thing, and to figure out new ways of having claims is another thing. And a person is supposed to have new claims in his prayer. If a person wants something very much, so he should think, if I had to persuade someone for it, I'd try to find every way of persuasion. Well, when I'm speaking to God, I should also, so to speak, find every way of persuasion.
It's fixed. With the Shemoneh Esrei, it's fixed, isn't it?
It's fixed, but the understanding isn't fixed. You could have different understandings, and if you'll delve into Shemoneh Esrei, you'll see that every intent that you could have and everything you could need is in there. And even if you pray about the same thing, and I've tried it, I'm talking to you not only in theory, sorry. Even if you pray for the same thing every day, you're going to notice in Shemoneh Esrei there are ways in different words to find how that means that.
Right.
Yeah.
In this idea of that said prayer, which is said, we're familiar that before say shalom, you can say something verbally.
That's also
but,
true.
The actual power that your prayer holds in Shemoneh Esrei is all dependent on the kavana. It's all that in it, because you cannot say what you're thinking. So how you change the value of prayers through the kavana that you put into the words that you say?
We say normally two things. We say one thing, that Chazal included all the kavanot into the prayer, and therefore if a person just says blankly, I want to have the kavana that Chazal say, so that encompasses all kavanot. But we also say that a person should try to have kavanot try to have kavanah for the things that are necessary for him, and when a person could, he should add. And as we've discussed, the person can say his own prayer, begin with the shevach, end with the shevach, and keep it short.
And is the kavanah sufficient enough to act in the same level as actually saying something verbally?
That I don't know.
So when can you add your own stuff in this one?
The best place is in Elokai Neshama, in the end, before you Leratzon. That's the best.
Well, I thought it was right before Oseh Shalom.
Yeah, that's
before Oseh Shalom. We say Yiyu
L'Ratzon. Right.
So just before then or after then?
Before.
I thought before Shalom.
Where you say your name, it's custom to say your name.
Yeah,
right. So it's better to say Yiyu L'Ratzon, say your prayer, and end with Yiyu L'Ratzon.
I thought it was right before Shema Tefillah.
But Shema Tefillah is not always there.
Before Shema Tefillah is another good place to say it. The Mishnah Brewer says that it's better to go with Yul Ratzon, but you could also say by Shema Tefillah. What you're risking in Shema Tefillah is that you're saying it, you're saying your request within the blessings, and then you have to be a lot more careful about not saying too much. Whereas Yul Ratzon is really the end of the prayer, so you're better off saying there. That's what the Mishnah Brewer says. But you could also say in Shema Tefillah.
Rabbi, we're speaking about we're giving way to prayers that are that have given with Kavanah, yeah?
To say your own prayers, to add your own words into the prayer, into the Shemoneh Esrei.
But are we speaking about Tefillah that is uttered with Kavanah, yeah?
Yeah.
Has more weight than Tefillah that does not have.
Correct.
Sometimes you hit it out of the park, and sometimes you're just kind of going through the motions. Yeah.
Right. The minimum is you should at least have Kavanah in the first blessing.
But also, I think that Hashem still hears us, yeah?
He hears us. How do we end our prayer? We say, Shema Koleinu, hear our voices.
Yeah.
It doesn't say hear our intent.
Yeah.
Hear our voices. I said it.
Right.
So as a person should make his tefillot tachanunim. So there are two understandings, and they're both in halacha, about how do you make your prayer a way of begging Hashem. One says it's the way you act, and the other says it's the way you, your attitude about prayer. Do you say, I gotta go down? And we paskin both. You should do both. You should act like you're miserable. And the Midrashim also teaches that sometimes when a person acts like, oh God, it's tough, even though it's not so tough, the fact that he says it also has weight in heaven. Why it works that way, I don't know. Sometimes in heaven they're waiting for a person to krechts.
Rav
Dov Feinstein used to tell us. He used to say krechts early.
Isn't it bad to be optimistic instead of saying
oh, so he said, here you see, that was his point. That ordinarily in life we say, be an optimist, don't take things to heart too much. But when it comes to heaven, you should take things to heart. You should cry, you should say, it's tough, it's difficult. God help me out.
Schwab says on Shema Koleinu,
that since we're not, we say it silently in Shemona Esrei, so it means like Havana.
Okay. Okay, so that does away with what I said, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Back to the mitzri. I was just wondering if you knew about halacha that you have to kill an Egyptian if he strikes a Jew, if he did.
No, but there he was killing him. He wasn't just striking the Jew. When we get to Parsha Shmos, we'll discuss the whole story of what was going on there.
But there's no halacha like this?
I don't know of any such halacha. Certainly not before Matan Torah, and also after Matan Torah. He might have to pay. He might have to pay damages. If one person damages another. I don't know. Show me. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, so I'm curious. Why should it? Is it ingenuity? Is the word? Why should that have an effect?
Why, I never know, but we find it time and again in Tanakh and throughout our sages that God, so to speak, says you have to find the key that'll open the door. You have to find the claim that'll sway the judgment in heaven.
It's almost like the whole thing is almost like kind of sales tactic.
Right. It is like a sales tactic. God is saying, if it means enough to you, then you have to find the ways of making the claims. People are in a rush in prayer because they have to get to their job. Well, maybe we should take the time to pray properly so we'll be successful in everything we do.
Would you say Hibadudut is better than Shmoneh Esrei for this
case? I didn't follow?
Would you say that, like, was it Hibadudut? Was it called or no? Hitbodet.
What about Hitbodet?
Is that better than Shmoneh Esrei for these kinds of requests and stuff?
They're all good. A person has to down with a minion. A person's prayers have a better chance of getting accepted when he's in shul and with a minion. But if a person gets benefit out of Hitbodet, that's also good. Some people get it from going to the Kotel. Each person, what does it for him? So, Moshe Rabbeinu's davening, and Hashem isn't giving in. 10 times the Torah records his death, Moshe Rabbeinu thinks he's going to be able to overcome it, and therefore he doesn't get too excited, and God seals the decree. Moshe Rabbeinu sees that the decree is sealed, he wears sackcloth, he gets covered with dust, he wants to pray before Hashem, he davens 15 times till the heavens and the earth start shuddering. All the angels come before God and they say time for the world to be renewed, and God says no. Moshe's doing he's praying. God said, I announce for every court and every malach, they have no right to bring his prayer before me. His decree has been sealed. Go seal all the gates. He rushes all his angels, go seal all the gates, don't let Moshe's prayer enter.
As if he's afraid of the consequences.
Okay. At that time, the heavens and the earth shook, and everyone, all of creation, started shuddering from Moshe's prayers. That Moshe's prayers, the Medrash says, are like the sword that broke through the heavens, and nothing could stand in its way, for that was the hidden name of Hashem that Moshe learned from his Rebbe. And here the Medrash reveals us which angel was considered Moshe's Rebbe. Zanagziel. Okay. Regarding that hour, Yechezkel says, I heard God's voice and I heard a great noise. That great noise was Moshe's praying. When the holy angels saw that God wasn't accepting his prayer and God wasn't showing him any favoritism and he wasn't willing to extend his life, they all called out and said, Baruch Kvod Hashem Minkumo. Blessed is God, honored from his place, that God does not give anyone extra favoritism. God does not change the way of the world. God doesn't do things that are unjust. He doesn't forget. He is equal to all, to great and to small. Moshe Rabbeinu prayed the amount of prayers that enumerate the gematria of Va'et Hanan, and he said Rabbon Shalom, that comes out to 515 prayers. What
does that word mean?
Va'et Hanan, and I begged and I prayed and I asked for free. God told him, he said, God, many times I begged the Jewish people for you, how many times I was pained for them till they became your chosen nation and your inheritance forever. And I saw throughout 40 years they were in pain. I saw their suffering, I won't see their happiness. The Torah says that you have to pay a worker the same day. And now after 40 years, I worked so hard for your sons, and I've been so pained for them from Mitzrayim through the desert, the Torah, the mitzvahs, everything I set up for them. I saw all their suffering. I won't see what good's going to come to them. All these years I taught them, and now I won't be able to teach them. I won't be able to rule for them. And Hashem started appeasing Moshe. He said, my son Moshe, what's waiting for you? And now the Medrash goes through a description of Olam Haba. What's going to be there. God tells Moshe, your days are going to be finished, but your light is not. And again, the Medrash goes into what Olam Haba is. Okay. Moshe says, Ribon Shom, if I won't support the Jewish people, let my sons be instead of me, or the sons of Aaron, my brother. Moshe said, no, Yeshua is the one that's leading them in. Because when Moshe saw everything was decreed, Moshe went, and from the 20th of Tishrei till Aleph Shvat, 95 days, he taught the Jewish people. On Aleph Shvat, he called the Jewish people, and he taught them the Torah. Aleph Shvat is the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, right? Dvarim, like we noticed in the beginning of Sefer Dvarim, El Dvarim Asher Dibur Moshe, about Chada Sar Chodesh, the 11th month, Shvat Adar, we have a total of 30 days in Shvat, 7 days in Adar. Moshe teaches them the Torah. 70 languages, and...
What? The purpose of that, 70 languages?
I don't know.
So the nations will understand.
The... What?
So the nations will understand.
I don't know. 36 days. We said that was the gematria of Eicha. For 36 days he teaches them the Torah. And on the 7th day, Zayin Adar, that's the day he dies. A bat kol went out on Zayin Adar and said, Moshe, be careful because you have no more life left. Today's your last day. Rabbi Chevel says on that day that Moshe Rabbeinu died, he wrote the Yud Gimel Midos and he sent a sefer for each shevet. And it wasn't yet midday. We discussed that this was a great nes, that Moshe could write a Sefer Torah in a day, 13 Sefer Torah in a day. It's impossible for any human to do. Moshe did it.
Yud Gimel?
Yud Gimel. He wrote the Yud Gimel Midos, the 13 attributes of Hashem. He wrote them, and he wrote a Sefer Torah for each Shevet. And then he called each Shevet, and he gave them the Torah and the mitzvos. Each Shevet came before him. And the separate Sefer Torah, which was in the Aron, he rebuked everyone, and each person on his own got a speech from Moshe Rabbeinu. And this goes back to the Gra that we discussed in Mishlei, that the Gra says the Navi's job was to help each individual find his way in Avodas Hashem. The Gra explains in Mishlei that no two people are supposed to serve Hashem the same way. We each have different strengths. We each have our derech. Says that was part of the Navi's job. He'd give each person how he's supposed to serve Hashem. So now Moshe is giving each person his own pep talk at the end, each man and each woman. And then he told them, be careful to honor the Torah and the mitzvos. There's a medrash that some say that Gavriel went down and took the Torah from Moshe and brought it up to the Bezdin in heavens to show Moshe's tzitkus, what he did. And throughout the heavens, they saw Moshe's Torah. That's what the pasuk says, tzitkot Hashem, tzitkat Hashem sa'u mishpatav mi'Yisrael. And this Sefer Torah stayed in heaven, and every Monday and Thursday and every holiday, they read that. Moshe Rabbeinu's institution that we read every holiday, what we do on that holiday, and Monday and Thursday, that you shouldn't have 3 days without learning Torah. I'm Rabbi Yoshua. That hour that Moshe made Yoshua the head, and they were calling out before Yoshua that he's the leader, and they said, come hear the new prophet. Everyone went up to honor Yoshua. And then Moshe commanded to bring a throne of gold and crowns and special royal clothing. And Moshe stood and he set up the Beis Medrash for Yoshua. And then Moshe went to Yoshua and he dressed him with his royal clothing and set him up to teach the Jewish people. And Kalev ben Yefuna was his loudspeaker. He was the Mturgaman. And Yoshua sat there and taught the Jewish people in front of Moshe. And this showed that he was the next leader. Today we have a minhag that goes back to Rabbeinu Tam, that the Rosh Yeshiva always gets Shlishi. And today also, when the Rosh Yeshiva wants to show that someone else is going to be Rosh Yeshiva, so he gives him Shlishi. That's why you see arguments about who's going to get Shlishi. It's because that shows he's he's running the show. So they, in shuls, you don't see the rabbis doing this. Most shuls, they let everyone get shlishi. But in yeshivas, so Rabbeinu Tam instituted that he always got shlishi, and this was a sign he was Rosh Yeshiva. I don't know. It's probably Rashi Tevis of a Pasuk. Many names of Malachim are Rashi Tevis of Pesukim.
Like Mikael.
Mikael is who's like Hashem. Maybe it's Zenignaz. Maybe that's what it is. This is hidden.
What was Rashi? Catch that.
The angel's name is Zenagziel, the angel that was considered Moshe's Rebbe.
They said that when the Rebbe passes on, it's a speech.
He gets the third aliyah. We'll miss you. Okay. I say we stop.